Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
You're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 460. I'm Amy Matheny. And wow, it has hit the springtime here in the Windy City. I got to tell you, it feels like summer is possible in early March, which is crazy. And I have to tell you that it's just, I don't know. I love the springtime. And so things starting to bud and the weather being good and walks in the afternoon, you can start sensing life outside and dinners al fresco and Edgewater and Hollywood Beach ramping up here not too long, which is exciting. Continuing a bit of our conversation last week, when Scott Duff and I were talking about high school and bullying and being gay and being young and both of us going to see FML. Well, today, the man behind the It Gets Better campaign, which has become a phenom, a revolution, social activism at its best in social media, Dan Savage is here of Savage Love. He's launching a new show on MTV, a docu-style series, and he's coming to town to Steppenwolf to see FML and do a talk back, and just so much exciting stuff going on with Dan Savage and his life and the work he's doing for the GLBT community and also for young people everywhere. So it's exciting. I haven't spoken with him in over a decade, and obviously a lot has happened in the past 10 years. Also, Richard Knight Jr. bringing us his review of John Carter, the movie. A lot of attention on this. Hunky lead, and is it worth the price of admission? Also, what's going on in the GLBT news and theater from me and Kirk Williamson and the good people of Windy City Times. I have to tell you, what's really exciting is today I went to an event sponsored by the Women of Steppenwolf Theater. And it's the Women in Arts Luncheon that they've started doing now annually. And they raise money for their youth leadership services, which is internships for young people to learn about all different aspects of theater at a world-class theater facility, being Steppenwolf Theater here in Chicago. And they had this wonderful luncheon at the JW Marriott, the new one downtown, and it's really a beautiful hotel. And they honored Juliana Margulies. Now, you guys know I've got the Mirren and I've got the Margulies, and I have seen the Juliana Margulies now live and in the flesh. She's a teeny little slip of a thing, about my height, but very tiny, very sweet, very classically poised and graceful and everything you'd think. Interviewed by Martha Levy after the luncheon, kind of an Inside the Actor's Studio conversation for 30 minutes, just about her career and being a woman in theater and in television. And just a really interesting look at her. And, but I did get to ask a question. which I referenced the fact that they filmed The Good Wife in New York, and that how many wonderful New York stage actors they use on that show because they film in New York. So a lot of these, I just think it has some of the best actors of anywhere, television, stage, film, in that show, on that show, cast as guest actors week after week after week. And so she said it was a good question. Little did she know I've asked a lot of questions over the past decade plus, but it was nice to have a direct conversation with her, at least one question and one answer. So it was a great program. And, you know, last year they honored Martha Plimpton, the year before that, Joan Allen. So it's always interesting to see who they honor each year. And Juliana Margulies, very deserving. And hopefully she'll come and act at Steppenwolf as soon as The Good Wife is done, which probably won't be for another few years for sure. But I hope you're enjoying this spring day. Sit back, Dan Savage. He's so engaging. He's so current and has been such a champion for so long of sexual health and sexual expression. And now with our young people and their sexual health, sexual expression, safety, psychiatric and psychological wellness with the It Gets Better campaign. So Dan Savage on the show today.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. Chad H. Griffin will succeed Joe Solomonese as HRC's next president. Griffin, a national communications and policy strategist, is widely credited for being the mastermind behind the federal lawsuit to overturn California's Proposition 8, which has now been ruled unconstitutional by two federal courts.
In Florida, the Key West City Commission voted unanimously to pass an equal benefits ordinance that requires companies doing business with Key West to provide domestic partners with benefits equal to those offered to married employees. Broward County adopted a similar law in November, also drafted with the clinic's support.
In Mississippi, gay rights activists tried to rally in Jackson to draw attention to the need for equality under the law for LGBT residents of the state, but were turned away by the police. Despite having applied for a permit for a march in the city to highlight LGBT discrimination, organizers were informed shortly before the event that their permit had been denied and they had no right to rally in the city.
In Virginia, 17-year-old Asante Cotman said he was suspended for 3 days for refusing to remove his high heels at Charles City High School.
Dozens of Harvard University students, faculty, and staff rallied on campus to call on the university to award honorary degrees to 7 students who were persecuted and expelled in 1920. The students were targeted by a university-sanctioned body known as the Secret Court that targeted students who were gay or perceived to be gay. At the rally, which took place outside an event hosted by Lady Gaga and Oprah Winfrey to launch the Born This Way Foundation, demonstrators presented more than 5,000 signatures from a Change.org petition to Harvard President Drew Gilpin Faust, urging her to award these expelled students honorary degrees.
Katie Butler, a bullied high school student from Michigan, delivered more than 200,000 petition signatures to the L.A. office of the Motion Picture Association of America March 7th, urging the MPAA to lower the rating of the anti-bullying documentary Bully from an R to PG-13. Butler's own experience with school bullying led her to start the campaign on Change.org to pressure the MPAA to change the rating of the film.
The Utah Senate passed a bill that would allow schools to drop sex education and ban the discussion of homosexuality in class. Legislators passed Senate Bill HB 363-19-10 after some senators said they believe sex education should be taught at home, not school. Teachers would be prohibited from talking about homosexuality, even if a student asks about it.
LGBT teens have a new social networking site, JustLeftTheCloset.com, launched in February and is a social networking space for kids just coming out or not quite out yet to connect with one another. The site is for kids ages 13 through 18 and has already added nearly 800 members in its first 3 weeks.
On March 3rd, Chicago HIV agency Avita Sita cut the ribbon on its much-anticipated LGBT homeless youth center, the first of its kind in the Midwest. The transitional housing facility, located on the fourth floor of Vida Sida in Humboldt Park, will house up to 12 LGBT youth age 18 to 24 and provide young people with social services like employment and education resources, skills training, and case management.
Delaware Governor Jack Markell has said that same-sex marriage is inevitable in his state. The comment came a day after neighboring Maryland became the 8th state to legalize marriage equality. Markell said that he expects his state to debate same-sex marriage legislation probably within the next few years. Delaware currently allows civil unions.
In world news, in China, Shanghai Pride, now in its 4th year, will be celebrated in June and not in October as usual. The country's only Pride celebration will run June 16th through the 23rd to take advantage of the warmer weather. The event has no parade, as any public gathering of more than 50 people without government approval is illegal in China, but there are film nights, a pink picnic, and a panel discussion.
In Australia, comedian TV host Adam Hills will host the continent's first mass gay television wedding. 20 couples have already asked to take part in the event, which we filmed on March 26th and broadcast 2 days later.
Representatives from some Muslim and Arab countries walked out of a groundbreaking United Nations human rights panel that was discussing violence against gays and lesbians. Speaking before the walkout for the 57-nation Organization of Islamic Cooperation, Pakistan described homosexuality as licentious behavior. Nigeria, Senegal, and Mauritania also departed. The development occurred after others discussed that all governments should protect gays and lesbians.
In Italy, the death of popular singer Lucio Dalla has sparked a debate about attitudes towards homosexuality. The companion of Dalla, who was 68, gave an emotional speech to the 50,000 people who gathered to watch the event. Some have said that Dalla's secrecy about his own personal life shows the prevalence of discrimination throughout Italy.
In a historic moment, students of the University of the Philippines have elected transgender woman Hart Dino as chairperson of the University Student Council. Dino defeated 3 other candidates. Dino recently completed a Bachelor of Science degree in mathematics, graduating magna cum laude, and is currently an applied mathematics major.
The International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission released a report saying that in Iraq, mass groups of gays and lesbians are being executed. A new surge of anti-gay violence has reportedly resulted in close to 40 people being kidnapped, brutally tortured, and murdered. The commission said that Iraqi authorities have neither responded to this targeted violence nor have they publicly denounced it, but that the country should protect all its citizens.
In entertainment news, Janet Jackson has officially said no to the X Factor as she couldn't fit it into her schedule. Jackson is resuming her Number One's Up Close and Personal tour and is involved in projects with film studio Lionsgate. However, Britney Spears has reportedly been offered $10 million to be a judge on the show.
Scarlett Johansson and James Darcy will portray Janet Leigh and Anthony Perkins, the stars of Psycho, in the Fox Searchlight film Alfred Hitchcock and the Making of Psycho. Anthony Hopkins will portray Hitchcock, while Helen Mirren will be his wife, Alma.
Out actor Zachary Quinto will join Jessica Lange in the second season of Ryan Murphy's FX series, American Horror Story. Like Lange, he will play a brand new character next season, which is set in an East Coast institution.
The most recent project of the L Word creator Eileen Chaiken, called Queen, has been axed for being too similar to the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo franchise. Warner Brothers TV received a letter from Sony, which holds the rights to Tattoo, threatening a lawsuit over alleged similarities to the franchise.
Is Rosie O'Donnell moving her Oprah Winfrey Network talk show from Chicago to New York? Well, O'Donnell has sold her 6,000-square-foot house in Lakeview for $2.5 million. The move is the most recent of several changes for the show. There are now one-on-one interviews, including a talk with former Illinois First Lady Patty Blagojevich, and the removal of the studio audience.
Kelly Osbourne will host Logo's 2012 New Now Next Awards and will be joined by Adam Lambert and Neon Hitch. The show will air April 9th.
Jimmy Ellis, the voice behind the dance floor staple Disco Inferno, passed away March 8th in South Carolina at the age of 74. The song, with its Burn, Baby, Burn refrain, helped propel sales of the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack to 15 million units.
Sigourney Weaver will star in USA Network's 6-episode drama series Political Animals. The show is about a divorced former first lady and newly appointed Secretary of State who throws herself into her job. The series is from OutGay producer Greg Berlanti.
Whitney Houston's estate has been unveiled, with daughter Brittany Christina, 19, receiving a trust fund, with her receiving installments on her 21st, 25th, and 30th birthdays. Ex-husband Bobby Brown is not included in the will.
And Shout Factory will release the legendary New York concert special Diana Ross Live in Central Park on DVD on May 15th. Originally broadcast in 1983, the concert has never before been made available for home entertainment.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. In John Carter, Disney's latest big-budget attempt at creating an action franchise, former Friday Night Lights television heartthrob Taylor Kitsch makes a high-profile try for movie hunkdom as we inch our way into blockbuster season. Based on Kitsch's physical attributes, which are noticeably on display throughout the movie's two-hour-plus running time, John Carter is sure to help build the actor's gay fan base tenfold. The movie itself? Meh, but not exactly either. The fault is not with Kitsch's acting, which falls under the standard issue of brooding leading man with smoldering good looks category, nor is it with Andrew Stanton's direction, who is making his live-action debut after having spectacular results in the animated realm with Finding Nemo and WALL-E. The script, too, is a nicely paced adventure story that hits all the marks, and the fault certainly isn't with Kitsch's co-starring cast. And Disney has laid out a sumptuous budget, more than sufficient for the creative team to construct various fiefdoms on the desert planet of Mars, where most of the action takes place, as well as on Earth. The problem is one of familiarity, or more to the point, creative cannibalism. A generation of filmmakers, consciously or not, have helped themselves piecemeal to sections of Edgar Rice Burroughs' series of adventure novels, which date all the way back to 1912. John Carter is the story of a former Civil War captain mysteriously transported to exotic Mars, called Barsoom in the film, who lands plopped in the middle of a war and finds himself the unwitting secret weapon that every side of the conflict wants to put to use. It's easy to pick out elements of other movies residing in that basic plot outline, with the entire Star Wars saga, the Stargate, Cowboys and Aliens, and Avatar being the most prominent. And the actual movie offers dozens more to an almost embarrassing degree. It's not Stanton's fault that his source material has been picked over so thoroughly and for so long, but it's not the kind of thing that sets the film critics hard to fire. And though the picture is certainly entertaining enough in the moment, John Carter is, for good or for bad, one of those big screen enterprises that doesn't leave much residue, not to mention pleasure, once it's moved on to conquer its next movie-going audience. Movies in 3D, though once again that adds nothing to the picture's plus column. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of March 12th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Broadway legends Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne are brought to life on stage in North Light Theater's Ten Chimneys. This revealing new take on America's greatest acting duo in their renowned Wisconsin retreat is marvelously wry and witty, says KBAQ Phoenix, and sparkling, says the Milwaukee Journal. Ten Chimneys is now playing at North Light Theater. Tickets at northlight.org.
Paula Poundstone returns to the North Shore Center for another fabulous, unforgettable performance. Paula took the comedy world by storm in 1989 by winning the American Comedy Award for Best Female Comic. She now appears on NPR's quiz show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and as a regular guest on A Prairie Home Companion. Paula Poundstone, one performance only, on Friday, March 30th at North Shore Center in Skokie. For tickets, visit northshorecenter.org.
Main Stage presents Judy at Carnegie, a song-for-song recreation of Judy Garland's classic 1961 concert. The concert will be performed by Chicago's top cabaret vocalist. Don't miss Judy at Carnegie, April 20th and 21st. Visit mainstage.com for tickets. Don't miss Judy at Carnegie at Main Stage. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
I'm Amy Armstrong.
I'm Freddie Allen.
And you're listening to WindyCityQueerCast.com.
writer, journalist, activist, and often he crops up on those talk shows as a TV personality giving his own views and commentary. Dan Savage is a sexpert. He's an expert on all things regarding sexual issues. The first time I interviewed Dan was many years ago. He popped into the studio here at Les Bi Gay Radio when that was unusual, that we were the only daily GLBT radio show in the late 90s, and he had just adopted his beautiful baby boy, and he was releasing his book, The Kid, What Happened When My Boyfriend and I Decided to Get Pregnant, which went on to receive a Penn West Award. And people were starting to see a whole other side to the sex advice columnist of Savage Love through this book. Well, in recent years, Dan Savage and his life partner, Terry Miller, have been vigilant in looking out for all our kids by shoring up struggling gay teens with the It Gets Better campaign that has now become an international movement. And I'm just so thrilled to have Dan back on the show. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So your son is like, he's grown up. How old is your son now?
He's going to be 14 in just a few weeks.
See, this is why I don't mention those facts, because then I just sound like I'm really old and I've been doing this a long, long time. But I was 12 when
imagine
I did that interview.
Feel.
So yeah, well, imagine how you feel. You've got your own teenager. Well, talk to me about how did the It Gets Better idea come about? And is it because you had a burgeoning teenager in your household?
No. You know, Terry and I often joke that we're raising the kid who beat us up in high school. DJ is not a kid that anyone's going to bully. He's a little toughy. No, it came to me because I wrote about the suicide of Billy Lucas in Greensburg, Indiana, from a place of real anger. And a commenter kind of cut through the anger at my blog, at Slog, at the Stranger's blog, and just directly addressed Billy and said, I wished I'd known you and been able to tell you that things get better, rest in peace. And that phrase like leapt out at me, things get better, because they have for LGBT people, I think, for you know many millions of us as individuals, and also for us as a community and a movement. Things aren't perfect, but things have gotten better.
Right.
And a lot of LGBT kids out there not only don't know it, but a lot of the people in their lives, their parents, preachers, and teachers, are keeping that information from them, actively trying to deny that to them. And I really feel that, you know, when a queer kid kills himself, part of what he's saying is that he can't picture a future with enough joy in it to compensate for the pain he's in now. Mm. And so the idea was, you know, we need to start talking to these kids, these LGBT kids out there in the sticks and the boonies, who don't have the kind of parents who would take them to an LGBT youth support group meeting. And sharing our journey with them, sharing our lives with them, to, as Harvey Milk told us, give them hope for their futures, that, you know, for a future with enough joy in it to compensate for the pain that they're in now. So many of us were there. So many of us were those bullied LGBT kids, and we're glad we made it, glad we're still here. You know, it got better for us because we made it better, because we worked, we came out, we did that hard work with our families, and we could help eliminate that path for those queer kids by sharing our stories. That was the idea behind the It Gets Better project.
So did you and Terry have a story that, you know, compelled you to say, let's just tell our story in a YouTube video? Is that how it started?
Yeah. That phrase leapt out of me, things get better. And I was traveling that fall of 2010, as I do from college to college and university to university, doing Savage Love Live, which is kind of an out loud, dirty stand-up comedy version of my sex advice column.
Right.
And thinking, God, I really need to be going from high school to high school and middle school to middle school, but I would never get an invitation. I would never get permission.
Mm.
And it just kind of occurred to me that in the YouTube era, I was waiting for permission, but I no longer clock that I could talk to LGBT kids, whose YouTube, my column, to encourage other LGBT adults to do the same talking. These queer kids and with these queer kids, because YouTube is an interactive medium. People can send you comments and leave comments of your YouTube account. And I called Terry and I said, let's, you know, I feel terrible about Billy Lucas. I wished I could have spoken to him before. He's been able to tell him that things get better. Let's do a video and talk about the bullying that we had endured and share our stories, share our lives, share our joy with these kids. to give them hope for their own futures and the potential joy in their adult lives. And that was, you know, that was the idea. And Terry, you know, we've been bullied, Terry much more viciously than I. Terry's story is very similar to the stories we've heard about Asher Brown and Seth Walsh and mm-hmm. Billy Lucas, the way mm-hmm. Terry was bullied, brutalized even. And he was so heartbroken that, you know, with all the progress that we've made, LGBT people have made over the last, you know, 25 years since he was in high school, but this was still going on, if not, in fact, getting worse.
Terry has
always been really shy and camera shy and never done any media at all, really wanted to do this and tell his story.
Well, yeah, and because it's so personal and I'm assuming so seminal, moment in his adolescence. Is it your opinion that it has gotten worse, that there is an increase in bullying and GLBT teen suicides, or are we hearing about it more? And if it is getting worse, why is it getting worse?
It's impossible to say if it's higher or, you know, that's for social scientists
sure.
to determine and researchers. I do think, though, that it has gotten worse. And we had, you know, those of us who, you know, grew up, got out, weren't aware of it. I certainly wasn't aware of it. I think, you know, David Sedaris contributed an essay to the It Gets Better book in which he says that when he was young and gay, a teenager in high school, nobody really called him gay or picked on him for being gay because nobody knew what gay was.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody knows what gay is. You know, it used to be you would talk to, when I first came out, I would talk to like gay men in their 50s and 60s who would tell me that they grew up thinking they were the only one.
Right.
That's not the common because everyone is hyper aware of the existence of LGBT people, including bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And while the culture has been in denial for a long time about the existence of LGBT children, those of us who are, you know, LGBT adults, we were once LGBT children. We know there's such things as LGBT children, but so do now the bullies in schools. They're on the mm-hmm. lookout for it. And we've had this mm-hmm. anti-gay hate campaign waged by the religious right for 30 years that's convinced so many Americans, and not just adults, also children, that LGBT people, simply by existing, are some sort of existential threat to them, to their families. We're an attack on the family.
Right.
And while mom and dad in some horrible exurb or rural area can only beat up on gay people from afar, you know, with their ballots and their checkbooks, their kids go to school on Monday and, you know, and there's a gay kid in their school. And they mm-hmm. feel that they have a right to beat up on that gay kid after watching the adults in their lives beat up on gay people too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of think, you know, it's the best of times, worst of times for LGBT kids. We don't want to pathologize all LGBT kids. Not all LGBT kids are in despair, are isolated, are bullied, are suicidal. Certainly not.
Right.
If you're a queer kid and you're growing up and you're out and you have your parents love and support, you know, you have friends around you who love and support you, go to school with an anti-bullying policy that's enforced, that has a GSA, there's never been a better time to be a gay kid than right now.
Right.
But if you're a kid who's growing up in, you know, Greensburg, Indiana, or rural Texas, like Asher Brown, there's almost never been a worse time to be a gay kid because you can't hide anymore.
Yeah.
You can't fly under the radar like David Sedaris did, or I did, really, right. in grade school.
When did the tide turn and you realized this was a movement? I mean, obviously, you posted your video. It got attention because you're a person in the media and you know how to make something get attention. But it really sparked something in people. I mean, you posted this video in late 2010, right? Like in the fall of 2010?
We posted it in September of 2010, mid-September.
Right.
And I think the first indication that we got that it was going to be big was that very first night when the channel went live and it was just our video, because so many people were watching it, liking it, friending it, sending us messages that we were overwhelmed just by the email response to the
mm-hmm.
video.
Mm-hmm.
And then that first week, I think 600 videos came in the first 4.5 days.
Wow.
1,000 videos came in. It was 3 weeks later, the president had made a video.
Right.
And for, you know, a gay man my age, I was 16 in 1981. So I lived through, got through, you know, the worst years of the AIDS epidemic. I was out and gay and paying attention in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it took Ronald Reagan 7 years to say the word AIDS out loud, and by then tens of thousands of Americans were dead.
Right.
And to go from a president who couldn't say the word AIDS out loud or act like he gave a shit about all these people dying who were Americans because they were gay, to go from a president like that to a president who, in 3 weeks, participated in this project and linked arms with the likes of me. You know, I'm not a non-controversial, touchy-feely, you know, up with people person. And the
well, you might be touchy-feely, but just not the touchy-feely we're talking about.
Right, and the president jumped in with me and Buck Angel and drag queens and porn stars who'd also made videos, and of course, you know, gay and lesbian doctors and lawyers and pop stars and normal people, and reached out to LGBT kids to let them know that there's nothing wrong with them. And that was really powerful. And when the president did that, because he really came down in for many LGBT kids, the worst bullies in their lives are their own parents. And for the president to look those kids in the eye and say, there's nothing wrong with you. He was implicitly saying there's something wrong with the people telling you there's something wrong with you. And for many LGBT kids, that those are their parents or their, you know, preachers. That was huge.
Yeah, I mean, truly a watershed moment when President Obama's video was posted. And obviously then it made enormous news in that moment. But, you know, it's still making news. You know, we do news every week on the podcast, and we try to say new people that have posted videos. There's lots of sports teams now that are starting to do it. And
Francisco Police Department just posted a video that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean,
just a couple weeks ago.
Do people contact you about, I mean, are there guidelines with a video when you're talking about a group or an organization, or do people just do it on their own now?
People do it on their own. That's always been the case from the start. It's an open source project. Anybody can participate. You know, if there's something in there that, you know, if there's a voice or a perspective or a life experience that you don't feel is represented in the project, go make that video. That's how it's always worked. You know, Pixar didn't call us. We got a call from the White House just to give us a heads up, but they didn't ask for our permission. You know, Hillary Clinton was the first high-profile political figure to make make its better video. She didn't ask for our permission. She added it, and we, you know, uploaded the link. You know, we uploaded, we added a link to her video to the channel, and now, but anybody who wants to participate can participate.
Well, the amazing thing
for
her,
which has sometimes been a problem, you know, because some people participated who, you know, they raised eyebrows. Buck Angel, a trans porn star, made a video, and some were like, you shouldn't include that on the project because he's a porn star. And I was like, well, it's a good thing I started this project because we're not going to fall for that kind of sex negativity. Some kids are trans, and some kids are going to be porn stars when they grow up, and they need to know it can get better for them, too.
Yeah. Well, and I just think it's amazing you mentioned Hillary Clinton, that what it does is it creates an accountability with her that I feel like then she modeled through with the United Nations and, you know, and more eyes to her about how she's speaking about GLBT issues in her very powerful international platform. And, you know, and I think it's kept Barack Obama as well to an accountability of protecting our civil rights.
Video, it was before the DADT repeal. It was before they dropped the DOMA appeals. They really, the White House at that stage had really not delivered on any of its promises, to the big promises to the LGBT community. And our reaction was, this video is great, and it, you know, it offers hope to LGBT kids, but you can do more. I went on CNN and MSNBC, and I said, this is awesome. We welcome it. The president has a responsibility. You know, he can't say it gets better. He can make it better. He can do things right now to change it. And they did. I'm not taking credit for it. I'm not saying, because I scolded the president, he moved on these things, but it added to the momentum. It added to the pressure. The best evidence, though, is in the case of Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, the best sort of evidence of how some people participated in the campaign and then had to live up to their fine words.
Right.
He recorded a video in which he said, you know, to all the LGBT kids in America, New York welcomes you. Come to New York. Everyone is welcome in New York. And you will be loved and accepted here. And at that very same time, he was zeroing out funding, city funding, for the Ali Forney Center in New York, which is the only homeless shelter for LGBT kids.
Right.
LGBT runaways in New York. So he was inviting these kids to run away to New York and defunding the place that could help them survive their first weeks or months in New York. And people pointed to that and jumped up and down, and he restored the funding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing what the transparency of the internet has been able to do for change in the GLBT community. And I think most of it is about, you know, it is the most viable place where we are seen and heard and connected, and we can connect. You know, when we started Les by Gay Radio years ago in the 90s, you know, it was the first time people heard gay people's voices, you know. And I remember when we went on the internet, we had listeners in South Africa and Germany, and people just hearing gay people talk about everyday issues and interviews. And now, you know, of course, there's podcasts and tons of ways in which to hear and see gay people in video format. And
You know, gay people don't exist if we don't speak.
It's exactly right. The voice is a powerful, powerful thing.
Yeah, we default to presumed or perceived heterosexuality unless we speak up.
Right.
We self-identify, which means we verbalize. We say, I am not what you think I am or what you assume I might be, because most people are that thing. I'm not that thing.
Right.
We have language creates our community.
Mm-hmm.
Stories create our community.
Yeah. Well, you are building a relationship with, and have been building a relationship with MTV. You just had the It Gets Better special, which allowed a lot of the faces, notable faces who had committed videos to YouTube to be a part
of
that.
And also we made sure that there were people who no one had ever heard of. The It Gets Better Project isn't a celeb-driven campaign.
Right.
You know, one of the people whose observation ended the MTV special at the very end was Gabriel Rivera, who's a Latino lesbian poet in the Bronx,
right,
who made a video that a lot of people, myself included, love, where she said, it doesn't get better, what happens is you get stronger.
Mm.
And we included her voice. It wasn't just, you know, the Zachary Quintos and the Lady
right.
Gagas who were in the MTV
right.
special. It was a lot of people that who are interesting and informed and insightful, but not famous yet.
But obviously, a part of growing stronger, a part of growing more confident, a part of building self-esteem is to be able to talk about some of the things that, you know, we're scared to talk about. And you've always been a huge agent for that. And so you have this new series that's going to be on MTV, Savage You, that's going to start April 3rd, really talking to people in that, talking to youth, teens, in that formative time period. Tell me about this docuseries about sex and young people today.
Well, it's, you know, we went to MTV and we pitched a very different show to them and gave them, at the same time we were talking to them, tapes of me speaking at colleges, which I do and have done for a dozen years. And MTV came back with, we want to fill that. We want to just do, we want to come along and do what you're already doing.
Because mm-hmm.
They're all about authenticity and what's real, right?
Right.
And so they I'm not doing anything on MTV. You know, some people are, you know, worried, oh my God, what's he going to do? Is he going to be different? I'm not doing anything on MTV that I haven't already been doing.
Right.
So it's me going to colleges, taking questions from, you know, college-age young adults about their sex lives and about their sex problems and relationship problems, and answering them to the best of my ability.
Now, will we see these youth? Because that may be
a gay dude.
Will we see these youth, though? Is that kind of, is there any legality or difficulty with then the kid has to ask their question in a platform where they would be seen by millions of people as opposed to just the people maybe in the room in their college?
Well, when I speak at the colleges, I take the questions anonymously. People write the questions down on cards.
Okay.
So that you get good, honest, real questions
mm-hmm.
and not, you know, people inhibited because their friends are listening or their prof is sitting four rows over.
Right.
And then we do some one-on-ones with students. So the Q&As are anonymous, and then we meet with some students and just do one-on-one advice about stuff. There were some people who wanted to come on TV with me and talk about things that I urged them not to. I turned down a couple of, you know, some interviews because I just, from my perspective as an all-grown-up adult, I felt that this wouldn't be wise for this person to have this on video out there for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to exercise some editorial judgment that way and protect some folks. But a lot of young people, they live their lives online. They live their lives really openly. They have different mm-hmm. ideas about privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were only too sort of happy game to come on and talk about relationship issues and their sex questions and get them answered.
What do you think we're doing with all this openness and what you just said that you're sensing now? Because I did not sense that when I was in college. We didn't have this kind of transparency. We weren't living our sex lives openly. What do you think that's going to do, or what are you seeing? How is that changing people in terms of how they grow into sexual mature adults?
Well, I certainly think people today are less inhibited and less ashamed. And I think the LGBT community really set the bar for that, or you know, created a dialogue. And I hate to, you know, give any credit or find anything positive about the AIDS epidemic that killed so many of my friends. But AIDS did force us to start discussing what people were actually doing in bed and not just repeating what everyone agreed people should be doing in bed.
Mm-hmm.
That has created a kind of openness, an open dialogue about desire and about kink and about monogamy and about all sorts of issues. And that's been really positive. People, I think, today are leading many, many, many more millions of people, leading more fulfilling sex lives because of the conversation that was started by LGBT people who who, as I said earlier, wouldn't exist but for a conversation, but for words, but for dialogue, but for stories.
Yeah.
And I think that openness is good. You know, I remember 21 years ago when I started writing my sex column, invariably anybody who, you know, had any sort of mild kink, you know, any straight person, would write me from a place of such shame and despair. I'm gay. Once you've told your mom that you're gay, telling your boyfriend that you're kinky is nothing.
Yeah.
We've always right. been really at ease about sexual diversity and difference because we are
right.
diverse and different
right.
to start. I get letters every day now from, you know, thousands and thousands of young straight people who, you know, have little kinks or weirdnesses or interests and not nearly as much shame.
Mm.
They want to figure out how to work this thing in their sex life, how to negotiate with a partner around it, you know, how to find partners who are interested in the things that they're interested in. But I just don't get these letters dripping with revulsion and self-disgust and self-loathing mm-hmm. anymore. And I think to some extent, sex love helped create that reality. And to a greater extent, I think the existence of LGBT people and our prominence culturally and our insistence on being a part of the conversation and being part of, you know, acknowledged as part of humanity
yeah.
helped make that change and improve the lives of many, many millions of straight people.
Well, we are far more mainstreamed than we were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, for sure.
And I don't want people to think that's a bad thing. You know,
right.
we have entered the mainstream on our own terms.
Right.
We haven't jettisoned anything or anyone.
Right.
Which is why, you know, Buck Angel's in there in the It Gets Better Project, and the president linked arms with Buck Angel. We didn't mm-hmm. have to shove Buck Angel into a closet or delete him from the community, from our community, to make us fit for the president to sidle up with us and participate.
Right.
And then that's hugely important.
It is hugely important. You grew up in Chicago, and Steppenwolf Theater here is just an institution around the world, but we're lucky to call Steppenwolf a Chicago theater. And their theater for young audience has been really impactful way to, I think, over the years, not dumb down, really elevate a theatrical experience and conversation in a very literary way for high school students. And one of my closest friends, Sarah Gubbins, was approached to write a play based on Carson McCullough's play, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. And we talked about this in our last podcast because my co-host and I saw FML, Fuck My Life, How Carson McCullough's Saved My Life. And I know that you are coming to Steppenwolf this Friday to be a part of the conversation that I think is phenomenal that an artistic institution like Steppenwolf has deemed important enough to commission this play. How did you get connected with this, and what will you be doing on Friday when you're in town?
I'll be attending the play, and it's funny, when I know I'm going to go show a new show, I do everything I can to learn as little about it as possible because I like it unfold for me.
Yep.
I'm proud to say that I saw Book of Mormon without reading any of the reviews and without listening to the music. So it was just like, blew me out of my seat when I saw it. I hope this is the case too with this show.
Yeah.
I got involved because my, you know, they asked through my brother, Bill Savage, who's sort of a, you know, is a prof at Northwestern and kind of a Chicago writer and historian who is involved with Steppenwolf and is involved with them. They asked him if he and I would like to talk about our experiences growing up in Chicago in relationship to the play and our experiences with being bullied.
Yeah.
One of the things I talk about when I talk about It Gets Better Project frequently is Billy, because not all LGBT kids are bullied and not all bullied kids are LGBT.
Correct.
My brother Billy was brutally bullied at St. Jerome's grade school where I was bullied, and he was more brutally bullied than I was, and he's straight.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're going to have an amazing, amazing time seeing the show. And for those of you who want more about It Gets Better, if you want to upload a video, watch videos, get the new book that's come out, or find out about the campaign, you can visit itgetsbetter.org. We will have that in our show notes. You can also take the pledge there. You can submit a video. You can donate a book to a library of It Gets Better, which is a great thing to be able to do. And if you want to find out about FML, maybe you can attend this Friday night. I don't know if there's still tickets, but maybe you can. But definitely, as I said in the last show, encourage people to see this. Visit steppenwolf.org. Dan Savage, thanks so much for being with us.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
Well, everybody, I hope you enjoy this springtime. The weather is continuing throughout the week. As you heard from that interview, we weren't able to air it before. Dan Savage was actually in town last Friday. So please, you can still see FML at Steppenwolf. But Dan Savage was already here, and I heard it was a big triumph. So I'm sorry that we were only able to air this interview after the Friday in which he was in town. He was in town on Friday the 9th. So if you're listening to this now, you're listening to it the week of the 12th. He has already been to town, but I heard he had a warm reception and really engaging talk back with him, and we appreciate him coming and continuing the fight on an international level to save and protect and inspire and provide hope to GLBT youth everywhere. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.